Welcome, everyone. My name is Cesar Romero, and I'm your host for the Workforce Agility Podcast. And today, I'm excited to bring on Mark Roberts. He's the CEO of TechServe, which is known in the industry as the voice of the industry in the IT and engineering staffing. And we're going to be talking about the industry. You know, if you are a staffing firm owner, specializing in the IT and engineering niche. We're going to be talking about the talent gap, the state of the industry, what are some of the trends that you should be considering as you navigate this world of uncertainty and disruption. And of course, getting to learn a little bit more about Mark and his background. But Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for the opportunity. Looking forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. So, Mark, for those in the audience that might not be familiar with TechServe, tell us a bit more about the organization and your current role there.
Sure. Yeah. So TechServe Alliance is the National Association, Trade Association for IT and Engineering Staffing and Solutions Companies. And we started over a legislative threat, but we've become so much more. And kind of our tagline, driving IT and engineering success, it really kind of speaks to what we're about. We do everything from benchmarking, holding conferences, webinars, just a whole range of things. And then we've launched a wide range of products to help our members become more profitable and to drive revenue. I'm the CEO of the organization. We have the nonprofit, which is the trade association. And we also have a for-profit entity, which hosts many of these products and services.
Awesome. And how did you get involved in the industry? Because I understand you've been the CEO since 2003, right?
Yes.
And you've led the organization throughout, you know, years of transformation. But how do you get involved in it?
So it's an interesting story. So I'm what I like to call a recovering lawyer. recovering in that I'm trying to get over my lawyerly tendencies.
Yeah.
So I was a labor and employment partner in a large law firm. I had also spent 4 years on Capitol Hill as an aide to a member of Congress. And so at the time, the real focus of the organization was around legislative efforts, really defending the industry. And I came into the trade association. I had done some work for staffing firms as a private attorney, attorney in private practice. But I came into the organization as their first in-house general counsel. So I'm a lawyer, and don't hold that against me.
We will not. Yeah. That's amazing. And throughout the years, what have been some of the biggest challenges, you know, as you lead the organization, you know, throughout this transformation?
Yeah, so, you know, we obviously very much reflect the industry we serve. So certainly there were some challenging times, post Y2K, 9/11, were actually among the most challenging downturns for our sector. Then came the 2008 financial crash. Actually, the industry turned down. It wasn't quite as bad as the one at earlier in the 2002-2003 timeframe. So we've sort of weathered those storms. The other thing that we're also addressing is the way people want to consume information and consume membership has changed dramatically. You know, it used to be, you know, everyone joined just because that's what you did. And now you really have to deliver value, and you actually have to deliver value every day. It's not about what you did yesterday. And so that's something that we've been contending with by, you know, developing a wide range of products and services that really are probably more for-profit in nature, as they say, rather than a traditional trade association.
Can you tell me more a bit more about, you know, those products and services that you have developed, you know, as the time changes? You know, what are some of the specific, I guess, services?
Shortly after I became CEO, we launched an insurance operation, property and casualty, for our members. We now have 400 clients within that operation. We launched health insurance, sales and recruiting management, just a whole wide range of things. And then most recently, we just launched an M&A marketplace platform to facilitate the buying and selling of firms. We thought it was an underserved market. So really an incredible range of things. And then we're also looking for ways to partner. I'm a firm believer that you're so much better partnering with someone who may have knowledge that you don't have or relationships you don't have than trying to go it alone. And so we look for those opportunities at every turn.
That's amazing. And someone that is relatively new to the industry, I can see how partnerships are a big driver for growth for many enterprises. And that's refreshing because I believe that we can't do everything ourselves, right? We need to partner up with different organizations because in the end, it's about making this experience better for both, right? The enterprises, but also for the workers themselves. I do have one more question on your background, because I was reading and I know that you are part of the staffing industry top 100 list. And I wanted to ask you about that. Like how does it feel to be part of that list, right? Like what are some of the things that what changed before and now that you're part of this list of top leaders in the industry?
Yeah, I'm just honored to be recognized and by my peers in terms of being on the list. But but really what even more than the list gives me satisfaction is just continuing to serve really just a wonderful industry that kind of, as you said, Caesar, serves clients, but also puts people to work in great jobs. And, so I while you're certainly appreciative of the honor, more than anything, I feel honored to being able to serve the industry and all stakeholders to the industry, the clients, as well as the staffing firms and the consultants.
I love it. And this is a great segue into, I want to talk about talent, right? And more specifically, the talent gap. That is one of the biggest challenges in not just IT staffing, but in the staffing industry in general. And I wanted to get your thoughts or recommendations on how can staffing firms face this challenge and in as they look to grow, right, and increase their impact and their revenue.
Yeah, great question, because it is probably the most daunting challenge facing our members, which is talent really in two buckets. There's the external talent, which are the consultants that they deploy at client sites, but also their internal teams. You can't grow if you can't add people to your team. And so that is the, I think, the greatest challenge of leaders in our sector. It was fascinating. We track a lot of data. And right before the COVID-19 impact, the industry and IT employment in general had really been accelerating and then started to decelerate. And it wasn't for lack of demand. It was for lack of supply, lack of available talent. We took a dip as a result of COVID, and now we're back above pre-pandemic levels. But the rate of growth has decelerated for IT employment simply because there's not enough talent. As for strategies, I think people have to get creative, think broadly. For example, we're doing a talent forum at our conference, which focuses on thinking from a diversity perspective. And not only diversity in the common way people think, in terms of, gender and race and things of that nature, but thinking very broadly in terms of the talent pool. So, for example, we're going to have a speaker focused on neurodiversity. Who's going to talk about how folks, individuals on the autism spectrum are often wonderful IT consultants and can really perform many of those tasks quite well. The other group that we're also looking at is the non-college educated. A lot of people think oh, you must have a four-year degree. And that's not true in IT, and to get people thinking in a broader sense. So I would really encourage folks to think broadly. One of the things I just caution is just don't go back to the same resources that everyone has available to them. Yes, you need job boards and things of that nature, but everyone has those. So how are you differentiating yourself as a recruiting engine? So just think broadly and think creatively.
I love that. And a follow-up question to that is, let's say I'm the owner of an IT staffing firm organization, and I'm considering leveraging, or I'm considering between two options, right? One is I have my internal core team, and I'm thinking about using contingent workers, right? Consultants, contractors. What would you recommend here? Should I invest in upskilling my current, core team, or should I look at closing that expertise gap with contingent workers?
Right. I have the exact answer to that. Yes. you need to be doing both. I mean, here's the answer, or the way folks should think about the talent gap. There is no one strategy that will close that gap or address all of your talent needs. You need to think broadly. And I think upskilling, very, very important in terms of your core team, but also the use of the contingent workforce. One thing that why IT in particular makes great use of the contingent workforce is so many initiatives are project-based in nature. You have a need for someone, and perhaps it's for a 9-month project, and then you don't have a need for that skill set, but you have a need for a different skill set. And that's the wonderful thing that our members and IT staffing firms do, is they provide that flexibility, that not only flexibility from a numerical standpoint, your core team can't handle it because of the volume of work, but also from a functional standpoint, that they provide the opportunity to rotate different skill sets as a company's needs change.
Do you have any recommendations, right? If I'm a worker, if I'm an employee W-2 1099 contractor, recommendations based on your experience on how to keep up with this upskilling and reskilling, right? Because I hear a lot of some of past teammates and friends that they are having a hard time keeping up with all the tech advances and keeping up their tech skills up to date. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Are there any recommendations that you might have for this segment of the audience that might be listening to this episode and wondering, yeah, that's great from the staffing firm perspective, but what if I'm the worker? What if I'm the employee of the organization? How do I keep up?
Yeah, no. First, I think it's a great thing to focus on. I mean, what a lot of people don't understand about the IT consultants that work with staffing is they're not there because they can't get a so-called permanent or direct job. They're there by choice. And their only security is their skills. That is their security, and maintaining those skills and maintaining them up to date is just to look for education from various sources. I mean, the explosion of online education just makes that so much easier. And there's many certifying bodies that will, provide education fairly inexpensively and in some cases at no cost. And so definitely look for those opportunities. The one thing you do not want to do is stay in place. Technology is moving too rapidly, both within existing skill sets and newly emerging ones. That's really one of the things that really differentiates our sector from so many other labor categories, is we're literally creating wholly new skills that didn't exist because there are new technology platforms all the time. And so it makes it for a very vibrant, dynamic, and exciting sector to be in.
So in a way, it's the responsibility of the worker, right? To be proactive and to look for those opportunities to continue learning and to continue growing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And some companies within the contingent workforce actually will provide that training. The issue has always been around the model where folks are constantly moving from firm to firm. So sometimes it's been, you know, folks have tried to figure out how does it make sense to invest in a high level of training for someone who will only be with me for one project. And some folks have come up with answers to that. So there are certainly companies that are investing in training of their consultants.
Absolutely. And switching gears with respect to the staffing firms, I understand that TechServe recognizes different organizations for their consistent revenue growth, for their commitment to the industry. And I wanted to ask you, what are some of the key characteristics that you observe, you know, from these organizations that get recognized by TechServe? You know, what are some of the things that someone listening to this could learn from the patterns, right, that help these organizations continue growing consistently?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do, and we've been doing it for a long time, like 30 years, is we do a benchmarking report of IT mm-hmm. and staffing firms. And one of the things that the benchmarking report does is it compares what we call the typical firm or the median firm mm-hmm. and the high profit firm. And so one of the things I always recommend, and we produce this report that, you know, for members, they can access it if they participate at no cost. But is you go down line by line, is sort of what I call the generic industry income statement. And you say, well, what are the high profit firms doing differently? Mm-hmm. And you start asking all of those questions. Because no firm does everything perfectly. Okay. And so there's always things to learn, even if you're in that high profit category. The other thing, too, is we put out a tremendous amount of information through our webinar series on best practices. And our conference is, although we have subject matter experts, it's heavily focused on other owners and executives speaking to their peers and basically saying, this is how I did it. This is how I became more profitable. And that sharing, that culture of sharing, has been a hallmark of our organization from the very beginning.
Excellent. And since we're talking about TechServe, I wanted to take the opportunity, you know, for someone listening to this and considering if they should attend TechServe, what else can they expect, you know, from the conference besides what you already mentioned, of course?
Yeah, we redesigned the conference to really focus on executives and management level employees. And very exciting this year is we have a crossover section on talent forum that we're partnering with the Society for Information Management, the CIOs and CTOs, the customers of our members. And we're really excited about the partnership. And so we have this crossover. They have their conference preceding ours, but there is a crossover day where we're talking about a common challenge, which is the, you know, what you alluded to earlier, Caesar, which is the talent gap. Mm-hmm. And so, but then tremendous number of networking opportunities, both formal and informal, and focused on the core issues of, you know, leadership and driving enterprise value, things of that nature, are very much a focus of the, and we also host in a very nice spot, you know, Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island. So, so there's some good fun to be had as well.
Absolutely. And I'll be part of that crew. And it's my first time. I didn't know about Amelia Island until I stumbled up, you know, on the conference. And it looks like it's going to be a fun time. You know?
It is a very nice spot. we throw a pretty good party too.
Absolutely. So if you're on the fence about attending the conference, then don't do yourself a disservice and attend. great. So one of the things I wanted to ask you was on, because I know you've done some work around labor law, right? And how sometimes it can be restrictive in terms of the access to talent. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, you know, why it's important to, keep an open door into international talent.
Yeah, very much. And yeah, our you know, we've always taken the position we want to grow the U.S. base, the talent base, as much as possible. But the reality is there are simply not enough U.S. Citizens who are going into STEM occupations. And so as a result, we've been supportive of the use of H-1Bs as certainly in the short term and medium term as a required partial solution to the talent gap. And so we've been supportive of the use of H-1Bs, which are critical. The other thing which a lot of people don't recognize is, you know, when many folks come in on H-1Bs, there's an understanding and willingness to move to where the work is. And so, you know, that's, you know, particularly important in certain, let's say, rural areas of the United States, where perhaps there's not as large a talent base. You know, someone who has five opportunities in New York City and has been there for many years with a friend circle and their favorite restaurant down the street is likely not going to move to, you know, Bismarck, you know, North Dakota. It's highly unlikely. And foreign talent, they understand as part of the arrangement is they will sometimes have to go where the work is. And so that's that willingness to move and to be flexible, I think, is also a particularly important fact that often gets lost.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect follow-up is the topic of remote work, right? Because before the pandemic, it was there, but it wasn't as talked about or as part of the workplace. You know, but now, post-pandemic, we are starting to see a world where remote work is getting embraced, right, by more and more organizations. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, what's the impact, what is the impact that remote work is having on the IT staffing industry, and how do you embrace remote work at TechServe?
Yeah, well, great question. First, I'll speak to our experience. We had always had part of our workforce, you know, working on a remote basis. Mm-hmm. And you know, we have our insurance operations in Michigan, and we've had people scattered around. We've truly embraced it. I haven't been back to the office in a month, and it's only six blocks away. So it's very close. But we've truly embraced it. And I think when our lease is up, we will probably jettison the lease because we've just been so productive and effective remotely. Mm-hmm. As for the industry, it's a game changer on so many levels. First, again, splitting it into two groups, you have your internal employees and the consultants. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the willingness to consider remote work is going to be a competitive necessity. To attract talent, not for every organization, not for every worker, but I think there are some clients that you know, went remote because of the pandemic, but are basically saying we're now going to expect you back into the office. Mm-hmm. And maybe they can require that and command that, but in an environment where people have multiple opportunities, the lack of the unwillingness to allow someone to work remotely is going to be a competitive disadvantage for many firms attracting talent. And I think that's the same is true for the IT staffing firm's internal staff as well. You know, there are challenges around remote work, you know, onboarding, maintaining mm-hmm. company culture, things of those nature, of that nature. And then also things like brainstorming, I think, are a little harder remotely, but folks are figuring it out. But I think it is an absolute necessity that people consider and embrace remote work going forward. The other thing that I think it's really going to change is if you do allow folks to work remotely, well, you know, typically most clients had recruited within their local geographic area. Well, mm-hmm. now that opens up, you know, potentially a national labor pool. But of course, from a competitive standpoint, that means other firms can also be looking in your backyard too. So right. lots of change ahead. I don't think anyone fully knows where it lands, but it is going to fundamentally change the industry, both from an internal staffing standpoint as well as the consultants.
Absolutely. And it's almost like it's empowering or allowing diversification of talent, right? Because you no longer have to look within your geography, right? It could be international. And plugging in an employer record to make sure that, you know, you everything is within compliance. But that's what I've been seeing, you know, in my experience. It's that remote work is allowing companies to expand that talent pool, right? Because they can hire anyone remotely, right?
Essentially. That's right.
So
that's right. I think that's right. I think if work from anywhere truly gets hold, and you know, when there's opportunities for if there are services like, you know, employee of record that takes care of the compliance issues and those types of issues, payroll and things, I think it really can accelerate this trend towards not necessarily just looking locally, but thinking globally.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. And besides remote work, how has the pandemic, impacted and shaped the industry? You know, what are some of the other trends that you are looking into or considering, right, as we navigate this disruption?
Yeah. So, I don't think the final script has been written on that yet. But but there's first. And it's something that we're going to highlight certainly at our event. Just think of what IT departments, IT consultants did in terms of allowing the entire economy, much of the economy, I shouldn't say the entire economy, but much of the economy to move online almost overnight. I mean, you had all of these people in offices, working in offices and, very secure, accessing their servers from their office and, particularly in more sensitive areas like financial services and the like. And then overnight, everyone was sent home to work at the kitchen table, to work in the basement, to work where the dog, the cat, the kid sort of scooted into the picture. So truly remarkable in terms of this digital transformation and the ability that it enabled an entire knowledge economy to move online. So I think that has accelerated, obviously, the demand on the IT side, on just for IT talent. So that's one effect. I think it just within the industry, I think folks are continuing to look at new IT tools. So I'm not talking about the tools they help their clients implement, but I'm talking about technology that can facilitate and make recruiting more efficient, that can open up new avenues to find talent. There's so much going on the technology front within the industry, literally hundreds of companies that are trying to find a way to deliver a value proposition to the staffing and recruiting industry.
What are some of the tools that you've are seeing or are familiar with?
Well, they're really in a few different categories. So there are things that that I think deliver value now, and then there are things that have the promise, tremendous promise of value later. So some of the tools I think are candidate engagement. There's a number of different providers that have automated or largely automated the candidate engagement process. And obviously, in an environment where talent is scarce, any way you can engage candidates. All sorts of tools in terms of, delivering real-time data for leadership to manage, recruiting process automation has the promise of the future of eliminating some of those sort of more ministerial tasks and automating some of those processes to create greater efficiencies. There's just a wide range. And of course, AI, chatbots, the list goes on and on in terms of ways folks are looking to create greater efficiencies and also a greater candidate and client experience. Mm-hmm. All of these will work or be adopted, just like any new effort at implementing new technology. Some of them will fizzle out, but others are here to stay. It's an exciting time, and one I think that all IT and engineering staffing leaders need to be watching very closely.
I have two questions with this. The first one on client engagement, candidate engagement. I think that's what we're talking about. What do you think is the biggest gap there, in terms of engaging candidates and making sure that, as a staffing firm, we provide a great experience.
I think I don't think this is unique to our industry. I mean, people are looking for authenticity and to be treated, as whole people. And so I think the key is, while technology is an enabler, to make sure that technology does not become wholly impersonal and treat people as a commodity. I mean, that's the one thing we always have to remember. And, sometimes our members have to convince their clients that, when you're engaging talent, these are people. They are people with backgrounds, dreams, families, expectations, professional aspirations. And so I think the key is, keeping that in mind. So how can you balance the use of technology and the wonderful efficiencies that it brings with ensuring that you're maintaining that authenticity and treating people as individuals, as whole individuals, and not merely, a collection of skill sets to be thrown at a client?
I love it, Mark. That's a great point of reflection for anyone listening to this episode. Because it is all about people, right? And how we treat them and how we make them feel. I always go back to that quote from Maya Angelou, right? People will always remember how you make them feel. And I think it applies to our industry.
Absolutely. Our industry is, these tools we're talking about are just wonderful, but it is at core, it is a people business. Mm-hmm. Here's a statistic we know from our benchmarking. 95% of all dollars expended by a staffing firm is on people. It's not anything else. And that's, it's all the technology, the rent, all of those other things, both the internal team as well as the consultants. So it's 95% of every dollar they spend is on people. So it is a people business. For the most part, with some exceptions on some of these technologies, there's no IP, there's no intellectual property. It's about, the culture you've created, the leadership you show. Those are the things that are the differentiators, in terms of the firms that reach those incredible heights in terms of growth and profitability.
Exactly. And this ties to what we're talking about earlier, right? When you recognize these organizations, right? These are also some of the things that you take under consideration to give that recognition, right? So it's important. It's super important. The other question I had, because you mentioned, recruiting process automation. And for the recruiters listening to this, and I've heard from some of my recruiter friends that, they are a little bit afraid of technology essentially taking their role. And I wanted to get your, advice or recommendation, to these recruiters on how to best navigate, this technological disruption?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great enabler because, again, going back to our just what we were just discussing, where they should be focusing their efforts is on that person-to-person engagement, mm-hmm. not on the ministerial tasks, the mm-hmm. mundane tasks. And so anything that that can open, free a recruiter from that people-to-people engagement, I think, first of all, I think it's just would makes the job that much more rewarding. And I think is ultimately in their long-term best interest. So, like a lot of other industries, I don't think technology is to be feared, but to be embraced and focus on what you do best. If you are a successful recruiter, you are great at engaging with candidates. Because of your people skills and your ability to connect. And technology just lets you do that more.
There you go, guys. If you're a recruiter listening to this, don't be afraid. Focus on the people. And I agree with you, Mark, 100%, that technology is all about enabling us to focus on what matters, right? And leave the rest to technology, to AI, and focus on talent and people. So there you go, recruiters, take notes on that. and Mike, I want to make sure I ask a question because I had Caesar, our CEO, say, make sure you ask Mark this question. And he wanted to ask you about your thoughts or recommendations on offshoring, nearshore, and offshore, right? And how staffing firms maybe can leverage this as a way to grow their business, right? Is this something that you see as a trend that it's increasing, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's no question that with increased connectivity and technology. I mean, as the old phrase that, the world is flat. We're increasingly globalized economy. And what I find most of our firms, we have some firms that have offshore development, which is mostly what it takes the form of. A lot of our firms, in terms of offshoring, it's mostly the use of offshore recruiting capacity. You see a lot of that. Folks really leveraging recruiting talent in countries that have larger number of individuals in these occupations. And mm-hmm. often, there's some element of labor arbitrage that folks are able to take advantage of. But clearly offshoring and nearshoring is here to stay. It's not a fit for every project, for every company. I think for large companies with lots of IT needs, you're going to have multiple things in your arsenal. You're going to have traditional IT staffing. You're going to have probably offshore project work, companies that do solutions, nearshore. You need to have multiple strategies, probably depending upon the specific need. So that's kind of my perspective. It's certainly going to remain. The reality is that development in certain countries can be more cost effective. Not always, but can be more cost effective. So clients will seek those out under the right circumstances.
So it's something that you should consider, but again, it depends on the state of your business, of your firm, and if it makes sense to implement this sort of strategy.
Yeah, I think, and then the other big decision is when you're talking nearshoring, are you going to partner with someone who has a presence in that country and has an infrastructure and understands the rules and the laws and how that country operates? Or are you going to try to set up your own dedicated operation which is obviously a vastly different level of investment and probably increased risk. So those are two different approaches. There's lots of partnering opportunities, but for the right firms, setting up a dedicated, dedicated development can make sense if you have the, the appropriate skill sets and you have the right client mix that has that need.
Thanks. Thank you for that, Mark. Sure. And one of the last questions I have for you is, I was thinking about this as I was preparing for the episode, and I wanted to get your take. If you had any advice for the next TechServe CEO, right? Whoever that person is,
I don't know, Caesar.
No, I do not. But I would like to ask this question, right? Because we all have aspirations and dreams, and even Marcus Aurelius, right? We all have our time periods, but you want to see the organization continue to thrive, right? Continue to expand its impact. And I wanted to ask you, for the next CEO, for the next person that is going to take the baton and run with it when it comes to TechServe, what are you hoping that this person brings to the table? Or what's something that you will want to leave this person with?
I certainly want to leave them with a vibrant organization of highly engaged members and partners mm-hmm. on a solid financial footing. I love this industry and I can't tell you how much I enjoyed spending time with our members. I mean, they're just really phenomenal people. That's what I'd like to leave with, organization with, that is, dynamic, creative, entrepreneurial, serves the members. To me, I always say, focus on the North Star. Our North Star is, driving IT and engineering success. And we mean that both at the micro level on the individual mm-hmm. company level, but also on the broader industry level, making sure that our business model and our industry survives and thrives. It's going to change. It has obviously over the time I've been here, but I want to see the industry and the members in a wonderful spot. As for the next CEO, I just hope that that they have a degree of they have those same feelings of wanting to focus on the members' success. And the industry's success, and that they have a degree of creativity and entrepreneurial mm-hmm. focus and willingness to take risks. That's the thing that we've seen. I mean, a lot of people think not taking risks is safe. It's actually the most risky thing you can do.
Yes, it is.
And we've taken risks and honestly, some things we've done have not worked out, but fortunately, many have. And, I'm fortunate to be able to operate in that environment that with a board that allows those risks because they themselves are entrepreneurial and business owners and embrace the idea of taking risks because of the mm-hmm. The payoff that usually results.
What is one of those things that you've tried and didn't work out? And what do you learn from that?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And then I also would add the adage, try again, too.
Right.
So probably about 10 years ago, we've seen this need for people to facilitate the buying and selling, particularly of small and mid-sized companies. There's mm-hmm. no one who focuses on that space with knowledge of the industry. And so we set up a little, at the time, technology was not where it was today, but a little program that would allow people to sort of mask their identity and allow buyers to come in and engage. And they wouldn't have to disclose who they were until they were ready. And so we set it up and waited for everyone to come. And you had certainly a lot of buyers come, but sellers didn't feel comfortable, so we shelved it. Fast forward, this past year, we started the M&A program, which has more more of an individual high touch approach, where there's actual people involved. And we have industry veterans who are involved with deep transactional and operational experience. And then we have this vast network. And introducing the people and the ability to do valuation analyses and the like, that was the game changer. We were astonished at the level of demand. But people didn't want to just plug in, you know, what they've taken 20 years to build. They didn't want to plug it into a program. but when we introduced the opportunity to handhold people through this process, again, it's about people and trust, especially with something as important as your business, that was a game changer. And the response has been phenomenal.
So it was same initiative, but you changed the format and the strategy, and then you tried again.
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. The same goal, that initiative looked nothing like this one. I mean, it was it just bore very little resemblance. But we were trying to facilitate it, and people weren't going to go online to do this. They wanted a person involved in such an important decision. And so we built the program, and we've just been astonished at the response.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, taking risks is one of the safest things you can do, as counterintuitive as that might sound, because you experiment, you learn, and as an organization too, right? Like, you tried this thing, didn't work, went back to the drawing board, you know, tried it again, make some changes, and now it's working. and I think that's important to have the mentality, whether you are a CEO or a consultant, right? Just having that mentality of constantly taking, I like to refer it as calculated risk, right? Making sure that you're not gonna go broke or you know.
Yeah, you don't want to put it all on red, you know, yeah. as they say. From the roulette wheel, but you want to take, you know, what we've done a lot of is take what I kind of call these micro risks. Test a little bit, you focus some time, see whether it works, and then, you know, so you're not betting the farm, but you're taking some risks, and you know, sometimes they're smaller, sometimes they're a little bigger, but I think that's the way to find out what ultimately works. Because I'm a big believer, the marketplace tells you whether you're right. And
yes,
you are often guessing ahead of time. You can do focus groups, and we do those and stuff. But until you release what you're offering to the market, you don't know whether, in fact, you know, your idea of a good idea is the same as everyone else's idea. So,
yes.
So, yeah, I'm a big believer in that.
Me too, Mark. And to wrap up the episode, I always like to ask my guests for any book recommendations or any, I mean, this day and age, it could be a podcast, it could be a course, you know, anything that you consume, you know, to keep your skills up to date.
You know, I'm just a big believer of lots of reading, from a variety of sources. I mean, yes, there are some wonderful business books out there, but I don't think that's the answer. I think reading history, I love, one of my favorite books is on Winston Churchill and because there's so many lessons of leadership and perseverance and going against conventional wisdom, stick-to-itiveness and all of those qualities. So I really enjoy reading a lot of history and just consuming information, talking to people and getting ideas, and then trying to cross-pollinate things from, you know, whatever you may be reading. So that's that's my recommendation, not exclusively, you know. There's no, as I think folks know, there's no how-to often book. Mm-hmm. You can't go and say, here's the formula, because
right.
It's not that easy. Yeah, there's some some good business books out there, but I'm a bigger believer of just being curious mm-hmm. and see how what someone has done in one area can be potentially applicable to another area. And I think, you know, that is the way to generate creativity and new ideas that could potentially be a differentiator.
Staying curious, I keep hearing that more and more, especially as we navigate this, you know, uncertain times. And I'm so glad that you brought it up because it's so important, right? Follow your curiosity, stay curious, because that's how you're going to stay on top of disruption, right? If you're always curious about knowledge and learning things. And since you mentioned history, there's a book that I recently read. It's called Sapiens by Yuval. I forgot his last name. But it's just an interesting take on the history of mankind. So if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it is a great book. Very, 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 very insightful and with some astonishing conclusions.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Mark, where can people follow you, find you, you know, reach out to you, stay in contact with you?
Yeah, just check us out at, you know, techservealliance.org, you know, and certainly reach out. All our contact information is there. You can see what we're about, information on the conference. Come see you at the conference, you know, and we're excited. That's the November 17th through the 19th at Amelia Island. So if folks are there, love to say hello, but reach out to us. If you're in the industry, that's what we're here for. Really, you know, appreciate the opportunity to, you know, to have this conversation.
No, thank you, Mark. Thank you for being on the show and sharing with us your background, your experience, you know, what you've done through TechServe, what your vision is, and guiding us through these challenges, you know, like the talent gap and growing IT staffing firm. We really appreciate it. And looking forward to having you in a later episode, but for now, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Caesar. Good to be with you.